is Board of Trustees of the Nebraska State Colleges. Mr. Welding, good morning to you. You may proceed, and my apologies, we were using a different door because of construction in the Capitol building, so let's give everybody a second to get in and out. We're working on that right now. So you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Nick Welding from Norby and Welding LLP, on behalf of the appellant. The right to access the courts of the state is arguably one of the more important and fundamental rights protected by the Nebraska Constitution. Article 1, Section 13 is unambiguous and unequivocal in setting forth that the only exception to this constitutional right is that the legislature specifically provides so. At stake in this case is the appellant Melissa Burke's constitutional right to access the district court. The question we are asking this court to answer, and I believe is the main issue in this case, is can Ms. Burke's union waive her constitutional right to access the courts through a contractual grievance procedure? Given that Nebraska is a right...
Does it actually waive access or does it delay access?
Well, I believe it delay access. I believe the constitutional provision used the words deny or delay access to the court. But given that Nebraska is a right-to-work state and one that I believe protects the individual rights of employees, I would argue the answer to this, the main question before the court, is no. Now, this case involves a non-renewal of Ms. Burke's employment contract following her nearly 10 years of employment with the board at Chadron State College. Following her receipt of the notice of non-renewal of her contract, Ms. Burke claimed that she was wrongfully denied adequate notice and due process associated with the ending of her employment.
Counsel, is Chadron State College an agency of the state government of Nebraska?
I believe we have some opposing counsel has some disagreements on that, but I believe that it is an agency.
Is it protected by sovereign immunity?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
And what's your authority for that idea?
I guess I don't have the authority directly in front of me, Your Honor, but argument was never raised at any point during this litigation.
Isn't that jurisdictional?
I believe so, yes.
So it doesn't matter if it's raised or not. We have to consider it, don't we?
Yes, Your Honor.
So this is sort of your chance to weigh in. Do you contend that the legislature has in any respect waived sovereign immunity over this type of claim against a state agency?
I'm not aware of any statute, Your Honor. But I believe I'm sure this would make any difference because I have not researched this issue, but Ms. Burke's underlying claim was for declaratory judgment, which she invoked the equitable jurisdiction of the district court, which I think may create perhaps some exceptions.
You contend that the Uniform Declaratory Judgment Act included a waiver of sovereign immunity?
Again, Your Honor, without having researched that issue, I'm not completely familiar with it, so I hesitate to answer too strongly, but I believe that the equitable jurisdiction of the district courts, or at least I'm aware of cases where this court has essentially ruled that the equitable jurisdiction of the district courts is beyond the control of the legislature.
In Riley versus State, way back in 1993, didn't this court hold that the Declaratory Judgment Act is not an independent waiver of sovereign immunity, and in order to sue the state or to bring a declaratory judgment action against the state, a different source of waiver would need to be found?
Well, I'll take your word for it, Your Honor. Again, I'm not familiar with that particular case.
If that's true, what is the independent source of a waiver of sovereign immunity that you would direct us to? Understanding that you haven't briefed it.
I want to make sure I understand your question correctly.
If the Declaratory Judgment Act is not a waiver of sovereign immunity, what would you direct us to for a waiver, if any?
I guess just the inherent equitable jurisdiction of the district court.
Are you referring to the constitutional jurisdiction conferred on a district court?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm aware of one case, I believe it's Drennan v. Drennan. I don't have the... Excuse me, I do have the citation, 229 Neb 204, which the court did reference that this notion that the equitable jurisdiction of the district courts is beyond the control of the legislature. So I'm not sure if there would exist any statute that would specifically waive a district court's equitable jurisdiction.
Have we ever said that a district court's constitutional equity jurisdiction somehow abrogates the state's sovereign immunity?
I'm not aware of that.
All right, thank you.
I guess I'd like to go to really what I believe is the crux of the board's argument, which again is essentially that Ms. Burke was required to exhaust the contractual grievance procedure before ever getting to the district court. And I think that requires some analysis of the grievance procedure itself. Again, the grievance procedure exists within the collective bargaining agreement between Ms. Burke's union and the board. And the grievance procedure, which the board is suggested that Ms. Burke was required to exhaust, would have required her to present her grievance to nearly all the same college officials who were involved in the initial decisions associated with her employment. And by its own terms, the grievance process does create a delay. By its own terms, I believe the grievance process could take up to weeks, perhaps even months, if taken to its full resolution. So I believe
is your client's claim founded upon a contract?
Yes, it is.
And which contract is that?
The collective bargaining agreement. Ms. Burke does not. She, at the any of her employment, she held the position of an assistant athletic director. She is not subject to any statutory continuing contract rights, which would exist for K-12 public schools. So her continuing contract rights are provided by the collective bargaining agreement.
Okay. Where does that take us? I mean, it seems to me that, declaratory judgment, even if we assume that sovereign immunity doesn't apply, is sui generis, and you're talking, it takes on the view of what type of case it is, whether it's in equity or in law. But if your claim is founded on breach of contract, isn't that clearly a law claim?
Well, yes, it is. I mean, it's an equitable type of claim. I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as a breach of contract claim. It's a declaratory judgment where Ms. Burke brought her declaratory judgment before her contract expired, so before she had ever experienced really any damages, which I believe is within the purview or the purpose of a declaratory judgment is preemptive justice. She brought her claim before her contract expired, and it was within the district court setting, basically throughout the entire district court setting, the board took the position that she could not be in the district court because she did not exhaust this contractual grievance procedure.
So what term of the contract was your client seeking to declare the meaning of?
The portions of the collective bargaining agreement which set forth the notice and due process rights for bargaining unit members that are subject to the collective bargaining
agreement. Were they ambiguous?
No, they are not.
Was there any dispute about what they meant? I mean, isn't your argument about whether or not those provisions were followed not what they mean?
Yes, exactly. And that's really, what is the effect of what happens if the college does not follow the contractual provision?
So are you seeking to enforce the collective bargaining agreement or interpret it in your declaratory judgment action?
Enforce the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, but also determine what is the result if Ms. Burke is not provided the due process and notice provisions required by the contract. I compare it similar to the case, it's Bentley v. School, I can't remember the school district name, but it's essentially the same type of claim where a K-12 teacher brought a declaratory judgment asking the district court to declare what is the impact or what is the result if this K-12 teacher is denied very similar notice and due process rights. And in that case, the district court did issue a declaratory judgment. And the District Court of Dawes County took this Bentley case in consideration at the very outset of this case in determining whether or not a declaratory judgment was proper. So I guess the main portions for the main arguments in my case is that essentially Ms. Burke has a constitutional right to access the district court without delay. The board's argument that she must first exhaust the grievance procedure violates her constitutional. And the exception under Article 1,
well,
Section...
back to the Constitution. There's some language about that authorizes arbitration and some other kinds of things, and isn't there some language fairly broadly that would allow this kind of delay?
I'm not aware of any statute, Your Honor. I don't believe the board has cited any specific statute that says grievance procedures must be exhausted prior to going to the district court. And I think that's the very big point, because this court has said in Goolsbee v. Anderson that absent express legislation, this court will not interpret the statutes of the state as denying a plaintiff their right to access to district courts. So what we have here is a complete lack of a statute, again, saying grievance procedures must be exhausted prior to going to district court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Martin, good morning again.
Good morning. May it please the court, George Martin, I'm from Barrett Home on behalf of the state colleges. The college's appeal goes to subject matter jurisdiction, albeit the argument there that this was not properly pled. This is a declaratory judgment action filed, we believe, to avoid a breach of contract claim where the grievance procedure that wasn't followed would become maybe more evident to the underlying court. This wasn't a request for rights to be declared. This was a request and pled almost precisely like a breach of contract claim. Allegations that provisions hadn't been followed and allegations that damages should be awarded. The statutory language in the Declaratory Judgments Act makes pretty clear you've got to have first a declaration, and then secondly, after that declaration, you can ask the district court to enforce rights or take action. And that is not the case here, and that distinction is important, especially again on the facts of this case, because we've got a grievance procedure that we believe was purposely circumvented by a declaratory, what was purported to be a declaratory judgment.
Counsel, while you have the opportunity, I'd like to have you address the threshold sovereign immunity questions.
Sure. That's not something we looked at either. Seems to me that if the state of Nebraska enters into a collective bargaining agreement, there ought to be a mechanism for employees to enforce that. I don't think it's under the Declaratory Judgments Act.
Is the mechanism through the grievance procedure in the contract itself, or is it somewhere else?
I believe it starts with the grievance procedure in the contract, yes.
Can you point us to any other case where there's been a declaratory judgment action brought against the board over a collective bargaining agreement?
No. No. With regard to the underlying merits, our view is the same as the district court's, that the Armstrong case is pretty spot on and would control. Policy declarations in Armstrong fit this case to a T, and I believe in Armstrong there's even a mention that employers can enter into these kinds of agreements and be enforceable, even though that case involved a student. So the state college's position is that this wasn't an appropriate declaratory judgment action. This was really a breach of contract designed to circumvent that grievance process, and therefore the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction, and if somehow the court didn't, the merits would be resolved by Armstrong.
Setting aside the issue of sovereign immunity, the Armstrong case involved a private college, not a state college. What difference does that make?
None, as far as the state colleges are concerned. I don't think the private nature of the college at issue in Armstrong was what drove that decision. What drove that decision was the recognition that this isn't a waiver of a right. This is just something that, from a policy standpoint, makes a lot of sense for the state. I don't see any distinction in the application of that policy to the state colleges. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? We do not have any time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Webb.